Ever been deep in a case and wondered if the cops make like a small error on the paperwork for a search warrant, does that automatically mean the evidence gets tossed out even if they genuinely found the goods? That's the kind of real-world legal puzzle we're digging into today with a deep dive into a pivotal 1988 Florida Supreme Court case, Birney versus State.
Yeah, this 88 decision, Bernie, it's still a cornerstone, especially for you law students navigating the complexities of criminal procedure. It sits squarely at the intersection of Florida's own laws, the Florida Constitution, and the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, sort of the big rule book for searches and seizures.
Right.
Today, we're focusing on the exclusionary rule, that concept that says illegally obtained evidence can't be used in court, and one of its really significant exceptions.
Exactly. Our goal today is to unpack Birney v. State and really understand how these different levels of legal authority interact. By the time we're done, you should have a much clearer understanding of this potentially confusing area and hopefully a solid grasp of a foundational Florida legal precedent.
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's get into the details. It all started with a package being shipped, right?
Precisely. Emory Air Freight discovered a package containing cocaine addressed to a Vicky Birney. Law enforcement was notified, they confirmed the contents, and then they set up what's called a controlled delivery to the Birney's residence.
Okay.
Following that, they obtained a search warrant for the property.
And sure enough, after the delivery went down, they executed the warrant and found more cocaine leading to the Birney's arrest. Seems like a pretty open and shut case, but then the defense raised a really interesting challenge to the warrant itself.
Yeah, this is where Florida Statute Section 933.98 from 1983 becomes crucial. This statute had some very specific requirements for issuing search warrants for private homes in narcotics cases. It stated that you needed sworn proof by affidavit of some credible witness that a narcotics law was currently being violated inside the residence.
Okay, so what was the core of the Birney's argument against the warrant? What was the issue? Their main argument, and it's a really critical distinction, was that the sworn statement the affidavit used to get the search warrant only talked about a future event, the expected delivery of the cocaine. It didn't claim there was already ongoing drug activity happening in their home at that moment.
Ah, so the timing was the key.
Exactly. They even pointed to a prior Florida case, Girardi v. State, arguing that this failure to meet the statute's requirement meant the evidence should be suppressed, basically, thrown out. And initially, the trial court actually agreed with them.
So the evidence was initially deemed inadmissible. Wow, that sounds like a major win for the defense. But obviously, that wasn't the final word, was it?
Not at all. The state appealed, and the Second District Court of Appeal actually reversed the trial court's decision. And here's where it gets really interesting for understanding the interplay of state and federal law. They brought in the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule.
The good faith exception. That definitely rings a bell. Wasn't that established by a pretty significant Supreme Court case?
Exactly. The appellate court's reasoning heavily relied on the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in United States v. Leon from 1984. Leon essentially established that if law enforcement officers act with an objective and reasonable belief in the validity of a warrant issued by a neutral judge, the evidence they find shouldn't be excluded, even if the warrant is later determined to have been technically flawed.
Okay.
So the Florida appellate court concluded that the officers in the Birney's case had acted in good faith reliance on the warrant, despite the defect in the affidavit regarding the timing of the alleged violation, the current versus future thing.
Okay, so it sounds like federal law, with this good faith exception from Leon, was pulling in one direction, while this specific Florida statute seemed to have a stricter requirement about present activity. How did the Florida Supreme Court ultimately reconcile these two?
This is where a really pivotal piece of Florida's own constitutional framework comes into play. The 1982 amendment to Article 1, Section 12 of the Florida Constitution. This amendment is hugely important because it explicitly mandates that Florida courts must interpret their search and seizure laws in a way that aligns with how the U.S. Supreme Court interprets the Fourth Amendment. Critically, it also states that Florida cannot provide any greater protection against unreasonable searches and seizures than what is afforded under the federal interpretation.
Ah, so that amendment essentially tied Florida's hands, making federal precedent the controlling authority in this area.
Precisely. When the Birney case reached the Florida Supreme Court, they ultimately upheld the appellate court's reversal. Their reasoning was directly tied to that 1982 amendment. They stated that because of this amendment, Florida's law on search and seizure had to be interpreted in conformity with the federal standards set forth in cases like Leon.
So Leon's good faith exception just applied directly.
Right. Therefore, the good faith exception applied. The officers had acted with an objectively reasonable reliance on a warrant issued by a neutral magistrate, and the Florida Supreme Court agreed with the appellate court that the anticipatory search warrant itself wasn't constitutionally invalid under federal law.
So let me get this straight. Even though the warrant might not have perfectly adhered to the state statute's specific wording about a current violation, the evidence was still admissible because the officers acted in what was deemed good faith under federal constitutional standards, which Florida was now obligated to follow due to its own constitutional amendment.
That's the core of the decision, yeah. And it highlights a few really key legal principles that are vital for anyone studying law in Florida.
Like what?
Firstly, it provides a clear example of how the good faith exception works in practice. If officers objectively and reasonably believe a warrant is valid, even if it later turns out to have a flaw, the evidence obtained under that warrant can still be used in court.
Okay, makes sense.
Secondly, it really underscores the significant impact of Florida's 1982 constitutional amendment. It essentially aligns state-level protections against unreasonable searches and seizures with the federal Fourth Amendment as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court. This means Florida generally can't offer more protection than the federal standard.
Right, that's a huge point.
And thirdly, Bernie helps clarify the validity of anticipatory warrants in Florida. You know, warrants based on the future delivery of contraband, as long as they're supported by probable cause to believe the delivery will actually occur.
And for law enforcement, the practical implication seems to be that minor technical errors in a warrant application might not necessarily lead to the suppression of evidence, provided they acted reasonably and there wasn't any indication of, like, intentional misconduct or a deliberately misleading application.
Exactly. Now, it's important to remember, though, that when a case reaches the highest court, there are often different viewpoints, right? And Bernie was no exception. We had concurring and dissenting opinions that offer further insight into the legal reasoning and the areas of disagreement.
Right. Tell us a bit about those different perspectives. What did the other justices think?
Well, Justice Ehrlich, in his concurring opinion, really emphasized what he saw as the clear intent behind that 1982 constitutional amendment. He believed it was a direct expression from the voters that they wanted Florida's search and seizure laws to be in complete alignment with all past and future Supreme Court interpretations of the Fourth Amendment.
So for Justice Ehrlich, it was about achieving near-perfect harmony between Florida law and federal precedent in this area, kind of locking them together.
That's the essence of his concurrence, yes. Then you had Justice Overton. While he agreed with the ultimate outcome that the evidence should be admitted, he had a slightly more nuanced perspective. He wasn't entirely convinced that Florida should be automatically bound by future Supreme Court rulings.
Oh, interesting. So he agreed Leon applied now, but maybe not whatever came next.
Kind of. He did agree that the Leon precedent, being an existing Supreme Court ruling at the time of Bernie, was applicable in this specific case. But he balked a bit at being bound indefinitely by future unknown decisions.
Okay. And what were the main arguments from the dissenting justices? They thought the evidence should have been suppressed.
Yeah, Justice Barkett presented a strong dissent. Her primary argument was that the evidence was unequivocally illegally obtained under the specific requirements of Florida statute, section 933.18. Simple as that.
Because the affidavit didn't meet the current violation rule.
Exactly. Because the affidavit only spoke to a future event, in her view, the statutory prerequisite for the warrant wasn't met, period. And therefore, the evidence should have been excluded. She also questioned the majority's reliance on Illinois v. Andreas, a case concerning abandoned containers, arguing that its legal reasoning just didn't apply to the situation in Bernie.
Hmm.
Justice Kogan also dissented in part, specifically arguing that the anticipatory warrant issued in this particular case was invalid on its face.
So there was a clear disagreement among the justices about the strictness with which the state statute should be applied and the extent to which Florida should defer to federal precedent, particularly when the state law appeared, at least on its face, to offer a potentially higher standard for obtaining a search warrant.
Exactly right. But ultimately, the majority opinion prevailed, establishing the key legal principles we've been discussing. And this really brings us back to why Bernie remains such a significant case, especially for those of you studying law.
Right. So wrap it up for us. Why is a case from almost 40 years ago still so relevant for aspiring lawyers in Florida today?
Because Bernie serves as a foundational case, really, for understanding that intricate relationship between state and federal law, particularly in the context of Fourth Amendment rights and the admissibility of evidence. It clearly demonstrates how Florida's 1982 constitutional amendment fundamentally reshaped the legal landscape.
By bringing in the good faith exception.
Exactly. Making the good faith exception, as defined by the U.S. Supreme Court in Leon, a key component of Florida's exclusionary rule. This has direct and practical consequences for what evidence is ultimately allowed in criminal proceedings throughout Florida state courts. It's not just theory, it affects real cases.
So the core takeaway from our deep dive into Bernie v. State is that while Florida might have had more specific statutory requirements regarding search warrants, the 1982 constitutional amendment largely aligned its approach to the exclusionary rule with federal standards.
Yep.
This means that even if a warrant has technical flaws under state law, the evidence obtained under it might still be admissible if the officers acted with an objective good faith belief in its validity, following the principles established in United States v. Leon.
Precisely. It's a critical reminder that when you're analyzing search and seizure issues in Florida, you always need to consider both the specific language of Florida statutes and, perhaps even more importantly, how those statutes are interpreted through the lens of federal Fourth Amendment jurisprudence as articulated by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right.
You can't ignore the federal overlay.
This has been a really insightful look back at a truly pivotal case. Thanks for walking us through that.
My pleasure.
Considering the Bernie decision and Florida's close alignment with federal Fourth Amendment interpretations, it makes you wonder, how might future decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court on search and seizure directly reshape law enforcement practices and criminal procedure right here in Florida? You know, what happens next time the Supreme Court tweaks the rules?
That's a great question.
And what are the broader policy implications of this close alignment between state and federal standards in this really critical area of constitutional law? Is it always a good thing? Definitely some important questions to keep in mind as you continue your legal studies.